We will follow the same rules that were approved during ALA Council meeting, Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. Thank you. Your voting record is at your place. You should have an ivory card for this morning's meeting. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to one of the microphones, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you're a division counselor, chapter counselor, counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood over at the projectionist table. A quorum for council meeting is 75 councilors, and I can see clearly that we have well over 75 councilors. The agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8.6, revised 6/24/12 at 9400 p.m. It was a very late night last night. I think it's 4 p.m. That's my guess. 9 p.m.? Here it is. It's 9 p.m. I'm looking at the agenda here. At 9 p.m. and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the council document pickup station in this room. I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up to the stage and sit by Keith Michael Fields shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Microphone number 3.
Addition to the agenda when you get
there. Could I finish, because your addition may be my addition. So let's, if you give me, just let me
sure.
Do a little bit more about the agenda, and then I'll recognize you. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under new business. The ALA Council Document Number 41, school libraries and librarians are critical to education success. In addition, I'm proposing we add after that a discussion about the conference changes that have been circulating around and people have been receiving information. It would simply be a discussion that we would add to the agenda. Larry, if you have a resolution, we'll take the resolution before we do that.
I don't have a resolution. I think it should just be a Q&A, but so that we can...
On the same topic?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Agreeing with you,
okay.
But I ask that the document that I referred to, it's about 10 pages, is distributed to everybody before that happens so that
yes.
We have something to work from.
And I believe that I'm working on that right now. So if I have your, this is a new item on the agenda, I just need your consent to add it to the agenda. Is there any objection? And we will get that document. I'm sorry. Microphone number 4.
Al Kagan, sir, counselor. I'm just concerned that we might end up not getting to that discussion because of everything else on the agenda. So I'm wondering if we can move that item up.
We have, just for the council's information, if you look at the agenda, we have a treasurer's report, policy manual revision, international relations, which I understand has no action items, and recognition of retiring counselors, and we need to be sure to do that so that we are at 10 o'clock, retiring counselors are available for a picture. So we'll work around that time frame as well. We actually need to take the school libraries and librarians resolution first under new business because of how it got referred and it being there. Are you suggesting we bump committee reports?
I am, but of course we would like to see that document before we have the discussion, so that's the complication.
Okay, we do have 3.5 hours scheduled for today. And it's my sense from the agenda that we have that we will have plenty of time to get through these items and have plenty of time for a discussion. I realize that if some of you have not seen the document, I know many people have, but if you haven't seen the document, we will need some time for you to be able to at least look through it. So if we could, is it possible, Ellie, for us to adopt the agenda, and then if we are going forward, if we have the consent of the body to figure out how to deal with this issue?
Very good.
Okay. So I do have the consent to add it to the agenda is what I'm asking, and I don't see anyone objecting to that. So then I will consider the agenda adopted as amended. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 13.1 and calls upon ALA Treasurer Jim Neal to present the annual assessments of income for FY 2013. Jim?
Good morning. Because of the number of councillors who were able to attend the information session earlier in conference, I was asked to pick up some of the information that was shared by the chair of BARC at that meeting, and to also refocus attention on some of the documents and slides that I used in my orientation session dealing with the fiscal 13 budget. So I will go over a little bit of the same material, but hopefully that will be helpful to you as members of council. So in today's brief treasurer's report, I'd like to remind you about where we stand with our fiscal year 12 budget, to talk a little bit about some of the financial trends and strategic issues that we've used in building our budget for 13, and also to get your support for the budgetary ceilings as we move forward with the planning for the fiscal 13 budget. Let's take a look at 12 first. This is a snapshot of our budget at the end of April. That is 8 months into our fiscal year. And you'll see we do organize our budget into the general fund, the divisions, the roundtables, the grants and awards, and the long-term investment fund. And you'll see in this case, as we stand after 8 months, the general fund is in a positive situation in terms of revenues. The divisions are down, and you can see from that snapshot how that cuts across the various elements of the association. The next slide does take the other picture of the revenues, and you can see that the expenses, and you can see that the expenses in the general fund are less because we have begun to invest in the cost associated with Neil Schuman. I think it's important if you compare the revenue and expense slides, you see the extraordinary job that the divisions are doing in managing their budgets. Although their revenues are down $755,000, they've also been able to manage down their expenses to the tune of $1.6 million. So overall, if you turn to the next slide, you'll see that we have a positive variance of $419,000 in the overall ALA budget. Remember, this is after 8 months of the fiscal year. We need to look forward and understand what our budget prospectively will look like at the end of the fiscal year, at the end of August. And here you have a much more detailed presentation based on our projections of what that end of year might look like. And you'll see that when we take all of the elements of the budget, the bottom line is that we're projecting an overall $588,000 variance in our end-of-year budget results as compared to our actual annual budget. So let's tease down a little bit and try to understand what is driving that $588,000 bottom line. A lot of it can be explained through our look at the general fund. And in the next slide, we look at the total revenues based on our projections for the end of the year. Revenues up by $572,000, but expenses also up by $1.4 million for a net revenue variance that is a negative end of summer projection of $860,000 $961. Why is this the case? If you'll turn to the next slide, you'll see on the revenue side, we are projecting an improvement in our publishing revenue of $1.862 million. This is largely explained by the movement of Neil Schuman into the ALA publishing family, and this represents the revenue that we are realizing as a result of the Neil Schuman imprint. We also know that we had some significant challenges here in Anaheim in terms of registration, and you'll see in the footnote below, it's about $473,000, and in the exhibit area, $357,000. So therefore, the variance to budget for the annual conference is $857,000. Interest income is down from budget projection, $390,000. This is largely explained by our decision to move the money out of the short-term investment fund into the purchase of Neil Schuman, and therefore we had a reduction in the overall interest coming into the budget of the organization. You can see that the revenue is a positive $572,000, but it's on the expense side, the next slide, that you see why we
American Dreamweavers.
$1,000. In the same way we have realized revenue, we have also realized some expenses associated with Neil Schuman, $1.429, and we also had a final determination of what the costs were in moving Neil Schuman into the organization, the closing down of the New York office, the move of the inventory, certain costs associated with the authors and with the staff, to the tune of $717,000. We were able to make some significant adjustments in our cost, improvement in annual conference cost of $438,000, and you can see the positive improvements and then also some downside, the $301,000. But the bottom line is that our expenses against budget are higher by $1.433 million. There is another element here that I need to speak to. We had a very detailed valuation conducted after we acquired Neil Schuman. And under accounting rules, there were certain intangible assets, such as trademark, backlist, online catalog, that have value that need to be dealt with over a 3 to 10 year period. A portion of that value, or its useful life, must be recognized in our books as an expense each year. This expense for the current year, based on that April valuation work that was done by an outside accountant, is $335,000. And that is now fully booked into our fiscal year 12 budget. So the bottom line is in the spring, we had anticipated that we would need to move about $400,000 into our budget from our reserve funds in order to cover the deficit for fiscal year 12. We were drawing $94,000 from our ALA Future Fund interest, interest that we had generated in 2005 and 2006 and did not use, but now we're investing it. And the authorization by the executive board to put $300,000 from our reserve into our budget to cover this deficit. We now find that we need to add $400,000 from our reserve fund in order to close the budget for fiscal year 12. And the next slide lays out these differences with some clarity. So we are going to basically use reserves to cover the fiscal year 12 loss at the level of $860,000. We also had our commitment to the 2015 projects. We believe that those will come in somewhat less than $200,000 in actual expenses. So the net asset balance, when all of this is done, is $461,333. We have built the fiscal year 13 budget in anticipation that we will have a net positive balance of $200,000, thus beginning the process of restoring the net asset balance next year up to $661,000. There will no longer be the one-time cost associated with the transfer of Neil Schuman. We have booked into the budget those costs associated with the valuation of Neil Schuman, the depreciation that we need to take against those assets. And we do expect that with the broad approval of RDA, we're going to see that asset, that product of ALA, begin to move into positive revenue territory. And we are hoping that in fiscal 13, we'll begin to see the positive flow of revenue for the RDA publication. So this is basically where we find ourselves. BARC and the FNA have unanimously endorsed this financial strategy and are recommending to the executive board that we draw down the funds from our reserve in order to close the budget for fiscal year 12. Let me turn your attention quickly to fiscal year 13. We all know that we're dealing with some extraordinary economic challenges. There are continuing fiscal concerns, particularly in the public sector. Our political environments, our federal and state and local support for libraries is something we all wrestle through, and it just drives at a very high level the economy of libraries and therefore the economy of the association. We need to understand how we can embrace more fully our 60,000 members around the country and around the world, and how we can develop a more robust international suite of partnerships, recognizing that we share with many of our colleagues around the world some of the same information issues. We're also seeing obvious digital shifts in the publishing industry, but what are the new business and access models that will affect libraries? And that's been one of our highest priorities over the last several months. We all recognize that Forbes article that laid out some demoralizing projections on the opportunities for new graduates from our master's degree of library science programs. How do we advance the health and vitality of our profession? And I think these are some of the higher level strategic issues that are guiding our thinking about the future of the budget. The financial issues are clear. Our primary revenue sources, membership, conferences, publishing, are flat or declining. Therefore, we recognize the need to diversify and enhance our revenue sources. We also recognize we need to be more efficient and productive as an association, and the degree which we can invest in new technologies, new systems, that will help us be a better association, keeping focused on member value and member engagement, and keeping our resources focused on our strategic priorities. In many ways, our budget is our strategic action plan. It tells us what we think is really important. The next several charts illustrate the trends that we have seen over the last decade in some of our revenue and expense areas. You can see the peak in 2008 in terms of the total ALA revenue and total ALA expenses, and we see that decline over the last several years. What I think is important is how we see our revenue and our expenses keeping in tandem, the hard decisions being made by LA to manage our budget effectively. The next one represents the same phenomena in the general fund, publishing, conferences, membership. And you can see we crossed the line in 2010. And that is why for the last several years we've had to draw down funds from our net asset reserves in order to cover our budget shortfall. But again, you can see a pretty close parallel between our revenue and our expenses. Our dues, you can see in 2006 when we approved a dues increase, we've had some significant growth in the revenue from dues, and that has begun to flatten off. We've been working particularly over the last several years on managing our organizational membership category, where we've had some erosion. In terms of conference, the top line represents the annual conference, which has been relatively stable over the last few years, and the bottom line is midwinter, where we've had some modest decline in the last couple of years. Just as importantly as the next slide, as you know, conference revenues and midwinter revenues are subject to the overhead rate, and therefore they contribute dollars based on their revenue to the larger ALA programs, Washington Office, Office of Diversity, Office of Intellectual Freedom, and you can see that when we apply that overhead rate, although midwinter is not losing money, that would be the wrong interpretation of this slide, you see some of the trends that are taking place in the overall midwinter. I can say that in 2012 midwinter, that yellow line is back above the line, so we're in positive territory even after we apply that overhead rate. Publishing reflects some of the trends we would expect in terms of the ability of individuals and libraries to buy the products, the publishing products of ALA. Publishing also is subject to that overhead rate, and you can see that the net revenues, as compared to the publishing revenues, are tracking pretty much in the same direction. So you get a total snapshot of what the income is from membership, from publishing, and from our conferences in terms of our ability to continue to operate as a healthy association. The primary sources of revenue need to be rethought in terms of ways that we can take the current things we do and make them more widely available to new areas of professional interest. And are there new products that we can and should be developing that help us extend our revenue into new spaces? Certainly the acquisition of Neil Schumann is going to give us some significant financial advantage. The launch of the Huron Street Press, where we're beginning now through ALA Publishing to make new books available to readers, to users of libraries. The first work in that series, Reading to Your Child, has already proven to be a very successful product. How do we become much more robust in electronic publishing, making our back files as well as our current publishing available not just in print but also electronically? And how can we model through our electronic publishing the behaviors that we want other publishers to practice in terms of making their works available, not only available, but also usable on all kinds of mobile devices. We need to begin to bring together in a much more systemic way the extraordinary work that's taking place across the association in the area of online continuing education. We need to find ways to engage more robustly our international community. It's amazing, when we did a documentation, we're actually seeing about $2 million of our revenue coming from sources outside the U.S. How do we understand that? How do we build that? Making our products and services available to not just libraries and librarians, but to library users, and looking for appropriate opportunities for mergers and acquisitions like we did with Neil Schumann. None are currently in discussion, I can assure you. A strategic priority has been implementing new technologies and systems. The board did allocate $1 million to a technology reserve fund, and we do allocate money out of our capital budget in order to build new systems like the accounting system, the web content management system, to give us the ability to work in e-commerce and to make sure that our hardware and software are constantly refreshed. Everything that we do on the financial side needs to address our basic values as an association. Moving to the next slide. How do we develop and deploy our resources to support the strategic plan and delivery of programs that are responsive to member needs and support the improvement of library services? We have our priorities, our programmatic priorities. We endorse them as council, and we need to make sure that our financial resources are advancing us in these key action areas. So what do we face as a council today? We are responsible for establishing the budgetary ceilings for fiscal 2013. Definition, if you will, in the ALA context, is the revenue that we project to make next year combined with the net assets, the unexpended balances which remain from fiscal year 2012. And because we're focused today on the budgetary ceiling, I am focusing on the revenue side. When I speak to you at midwinter and report on the 2013 budget, I'll be providing you with details about the expense side of our budget. So we'll have a clear sense of where we are investing these revenues to advance the work of the association. So let me go through this very quickly because we will be asking you to vote on it. Here is the general fund. We see dues basically flat. We see about a $3.8 million increase in our material publishing revenue, largely driven by Neil Schumann and Huron Press. We have a $582,000 increase in the budget for subscriptions, largely driven by the distribution of RDA. And then advertising, conferences, and the miscellaneous category are basically flat going forward. We have two good conference cities next year, Seattle and Chicago, and we feel relatively confident that we will see and realize the revenue that we have projected. This is a very conservative budget, and the budgetary ceiling of $31,640,000 can largely be explained by those advances in the publishing program. The divisions also are bringing forward a relatively conservative budget. It's down because we have one national conference instead of two national conferences next year. I point with enormous appreciation and applause for the divisions. The percent of net asset balance against budget revenue. Every good, healthy organization tries to maintain a balance of funds at least a 50% level to help it get through any trouble or challenge economic periods. In this case, collectively, the divisions have about 90% of annual budget built into their net asset reserves. Similarly, on the next slide, the roundtables, which are bringing forward a $394,000 budget ceiling, have $1.2 million in net asset balance, or almost 300% of the. So the point I'm trying to make here is that, yes, we're going through some challenging economic times, and we are drawing down some funds from our net asset balance, but overall, this is a very healthy organization financially, given the net assets we've been able to accumulate over a period of time. Grants and awards, also relatively flat. We all know in terms of federal funding for grants and foundation funding for grants, although we have been very good in this arena, and we have some knowledge already about grants going forward that we feel confident that we will be receiving. We, as a council, moving to long-term investment, approved a new policy, 8.5.1, which is the payout policy, and therefore 4% of our endowment based on a five-year rolling average, a retrospective rolling average, is being made available to be used by ALA proper and by the divisions and roundtables to invest in operating funds. So if we get to the last slide, the total ALA fiscal year 2013 budgetary ceiling, this is what we need to vote on. This has been vetted over a 12-month period as a product of a very rigorous planning process. BARC, the Committee of Council, has been intimately involved in every step of this process, and therefore we are moving the establishment of the budgetary ceiling of $65,026,831.
Thank you, Jim. It's been moved, so it's on the floor, so we should go ahead with this, but I also want to make sure we offer an opportunity for council to ask questions about other parts of your report. So let's go ahead and take the motion on budgetary ceiling. And so if you're going to a microphone, it should be in relation to the budgetary ceiling. We'll come back and allow you to ask questions about any other concerns or issues you have with Jim. Microphone number four.
Al Kagan, sir, counselor. In the report, I noticed that the loss from this conference is just about the loss, the total loss for the year. And I'm just wondering if any plans have been made for Seattle to anticipate.
Al, can I interrupt you for a minute? A very legitimate question. It's just I want to stay on the budgetary ceiling issue. And so is this, are you speaking to the budgetary ceiling, or are you talking in general about revenue projections and that kind of planning?
No,
I'm sorry.
I'm just addressing one point in the report, which I think feeds into the ceiling.
Yes.
Right. Go ahead.
So let me say, yes, we have done a very, very detailed analysis of not only what we expect in terms of revenue, attendance and exhibitors, and advertising, which is an important part. And I think it's a very conservative budget plan that we've outlined both for Seattle and for Chicago. We've also begun to look at some very significant adjustments on the expense side, trying to manage our expenses as carefully we can so that we can bring forward a projected positive revenue both from Seattle and Chicago. But as conservative as that budget projection is for those two meetings, we cannot anticipate what might happen over the next 12 months, therefore the need to be conservative in our projections. But historically, Seattle and Chicago have both been healthy conferences. They've tended to produce not only significant numbers of attendees, but very good day traffic in terms of individuals who bus in and come and register just for the days, particularly the weekend days. So I would say that there's a pretty high level of confidence in what we've outlined for the budget plan for those two meetings. Yeah, let me just say that there's no loss on conference here. The numbers that I've put forward are less than budget projections. So we are coming out of this conference with a positive plus. Midwinter earns money for the association even after we apply the overhead rate to the revenues. So let me make that very clear. The numbers I presented were the less than budget plan. Midwinter is making money for the association, both in terms of its total revenue and its contribution of overhead to the work of the association. So let me make that clear. I think it'd be appropriate to take any questions related to the budget.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. First, a comment. Don't use yellow when you're doing your bottom line projections, because when you do, it doesn't appear.
We're trying to hide that from you.
I see. No. And my...
I apologize. I had the same feeling. I went into a meeting and I started talking about the bottom line and I looked at my notes and I couldn't see it. I said, oh my God.
Okay. Cutting to the chase, though. You talked about the need to amortize the cost of Neil Schumann's inventory, and you reported on the current year.
Yes.
Going forward...
It's $665,000 next year, and it is in the budget.
Okay. And how soon will it cross the line so that the profit we're getting is much greater than the amortization of value?
Those elements we predict will be pretty much off of our budget in 5 years, but the net, the positive revenue from Neil Schumann will happen before that. I mean, so that's just a cost element within the publishing program that we need to build in. We knew it. I reported on it last time at midwinter, but we didn't know what it was. Now we know what it is, and we're now dealing with it in our accounting.
And it looks like it will be finished in 5 years.
Yes, that is correct.
Could be sooner, and certainly the profit.
Yes.
Of Neil Schumann is,
will occur before that.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember that with this, we've just brought Neil Schumann Publishing in. And we have about 6 to 8 months of revenue that we're looking at. One of the aspects of Neil Schumann is it's very one of its important markets is the library school market, and that tends to be July, August. And so we're anticipating not only to see a significant increase in revenue in that two-month period, but we'll also learn for the first time how that affects our overall budget plan. But next year we'll have a full 12-month budget for Neil Schumann and Huron Street Press, and we'll be able to better assess what impact that has on our total revenue plan.
Microphone 5. Microphone 5.
Hello. Brian Schottlander, Lex Division Counselor. Jim, this may be a level of detail below your pay grade. Oh, right, you don't get paid. Yeah. The $1 million that the board has approved for IT infrastructure, do you know whether that includes any funds to investigate an institutional repository for the association?
To my knowledge, it does not. Let me just say those funds have been largely expended, the $1 million. It was set up, I think, 3 years ago. 2 years ago, and it basically was invested in that slide of systems and hardware and systems that I indicated. But it does not include that particular element. But I'm going to let our executive director speak to that.
Brian, I want to thank and understand Alex has been providing some very useful thinking in that area. The 13 budget does include $10,000 to begin the development of an archive, and we'll be keeping our options open, what form that archive might take, how it might function as a repository we're going to be working on. But we have been spending some time trying to figure out what's the best approach to archiving, so we are implementing, and that'll begin in September. And then we're very much interested in Alex's contribution and reaching out and finding out what's the best way forward.
Okay, great. Happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian, I think we tried to use that technology reserve fund to pay for some of the big system implementations, systems that were somewhat in the $250,000 to $400,000 range. But we do have the capital budget, which we authorize each year out of our operating budget, which we will approve here in the budgetary ceiling, that does fund other IT investments. And that would fall under that umbrella of the capital budget. Yeah. And it's $1.2 million a year, that budget. So,
microphone five.
Mario Gonzalez, Councilor at Large and Member of BARC. We did discuss this in BARC, but I just want to clarify again for myself and the Council, Jim, that in the disappearing line on slide 19 of the Midwinter Conference, it falls below zero. Could you just explain to us what that means? And
yeah,
I have another question, which is in the awards slide, there is, in fact, an 11% decrease, and I know that we try to be very conservative in terms of projecting income for a budgetary ceiling, but maybe you can talk to us about that.
Okay. So two questions. One was the midwinter line that you can't see, which falls below zero in 2011. Let me say that is the figure, that is the line that reflects after the application of the overhead rate. So the, as you know, the overhead rate is determined each year. It applies... So 100% of that rate is applied to conference revenue. So there is the revenue, which is positive, and then the overhead rate is applied, and that, let's say it's a 25% rate, 25% of that revenue is turned over to ALA to fund the programs of ALA. So that is positive. But when we did that for 2011, it falls below the line. For 12, that is above the line. So not only is there is revenue even after the application of that overhead rate. So let me just say, when conference and publishing contribute to the larger organization through the overhead rate application, that is to the health of the organization. On the question of grants, it's, you know, that's some respects speculative. It's based on grants that we know have already been approved by foundation or federal agencies, so we can build them into our budget. It's based on grants that are in process, where we may have a very high confidence level based on discussions we've had with the grant administrators. Grants that we have medium or low confidence rate in are not in the budgetary ceiling. Does that address your question? Okay.
Elizabeth Ridley, Councillor Raj. There's been talk of a dues increase floating around. That is not reflected in the 2013, is it? So that plan has to be brought to Council
that
midwinter, and then we'll vote on it, because I really do think, given our financial circumstances, I hate thinking of it, but we're going to have to look at it.
So there is a dues, a concept document being discussed with membership committee and with various units around the association. It is not before us as a proposal. Several options are being looked at. Several of the divisions have moved to a CPI-driven model. That is, whatever the increase in the CPI, that would be reflected in the dues increase. And I think that we would potentially see this come forward to Council at midwinter for discussion. If it were to be approved by Council, it would have to move to a membership vote on the ballot in April, so it pushes it out in terms of when it would be effectively. But there is no proposal, firm proposal on the table at this point, just a lot of discussion going forward on how best to approach that.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, we're going to ask for the vote on approval of the FY 2013 budgetary ceiling of $65,026,831. Would all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed? Thank you. The motion carries.
I have one more item I'd like to bring to your attention. I think I reported to you that as part of our revenue thinking, and certainly looking out to the future of the association, we were organizing a plan giving program. And I am chairing the task force that is working on this. We have come to a three-year project plan, which is to raise commitments of $15 million in plan gifts by 2015. This doesn't mean you have to die by 2015. This only means you have to make the commitment by 2015. I can re- I can report that we have 40 individuals who have already committed $2 million. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. We do have a lot of work ahead of us, and we're beginning to shape the program. We recognize that most of the commitments that individuals will make will be to the work of divisions, the work of roundtables, the work of the offices. And therefore, we are developing a partnership strategy with those units of the association. We also recognize that we have to have promotional materials, and therefore, for those of you who are not at the opening session, I'd like to have you see the film that is a work in progress.
So before you do that, before it starts, just, I'm sorry, I forgot to say, mark your ballots, ALA budgetary ceiling. No, it was my fault, not yours.
We start our lives as bookworms, info junkies, the devil in the details. Early on, we find a special place that's just around the corner, down the street, sometimes on the other side of town. We find our home. It's the place where anything is possible. Not just for some, but for everyone. Here we discover so much more than books, music, and movies. We discover the power of information, and it transforms us. We grow up to become organizers of the universe, digital revolutionaries, American dream weavers. We are librarians, tens of thousands strong. We find ourselves in a league of our own, an unmistakably passionate crowd who believe that literacy, knowledge, and access to information are fundamental to the foundation of our country. And we're not alone. The American Library Association stands strong beside us. Every time we conduct a search, work with young adults and older adults, reach out to recent immigrants, improve information literacy in this competitive global environment, advocate for funding, and yes, celebrate the power and pleasure of reading, ALA is working with us, for us.
For me as a librarian, ALA has played a large part in my life. They have been there for me from the very beginning of my career, whether it was dealing with intellectual freedom, whether it was dealing with my client group and how to better serve them, whether it was dealing with standards for the profession, and most importantly, connecting with other librarians, not only in my field, but in librarianship in general.
Since 1876, ALA has been the champion of America's libraries and librarians, protecting the critical role we play in the lives of every person in our country. ALA is where we come for conferences and leave with the latest thinking in library and information technology, and friendships that last a lifetime.
I attended my first conference, actually, in 1967. And that conference was in San Francisco, and I was thrilled by it. And I was doing a lot of work in rural America, which meant you had relatively few colleagues in the same organization with you or even nearby. So the association meant a lot of interaction with a lot of colleagues, and it meant absorbing information from all kinds of libraries and meeting lots of interesting people from all over the country, some of whom have remained my friends for 40 years.
ALA is a catalyst for change, fast-tracking diversity, leadership, any issue or opportunity that will keep us ahead of the curve. ALA is a visionary, mobilizing a nation to meet the needs of the 21st century learner. ALA is a leader, tenaciously advocating for even the smallest library in the middle of America, and courageously standing up to the highest courts in the land to speak out against censorship, protecting our country's intellectual freedom. And now the digital age has transformed us again. How we read, learn, research, and organize the explosion of information that surrounds us. Never before have librarians been faced with this kind of challenge. Never have librarians needed the American Library Association more.
One of the top reasons for joining ALA, I think, is the ability to connect with your peers all across the country, all across the world, and learn more about librarianship in a global perspective rather than just your individual library in and of itself.
As a member of the American Library Association, you know the importance of this work. You know the collective strength of ALA's members. You know the next generation of librarians deserve to feel the transformational power of ALA.
I've made a personal commitment to join the Legacy Society. As first person of color, I wanted to make sure that I designated my gift to the Spectrum Scholarship.
I've made provisions to help support the association because the profession has meant so much to me.
Tonight, somewhere in America, another bookworm is reading on an iPad while texting a friend, "This book is awesome." And the cycle begins again. Make this your legacy.
And whenever I've gone to a dinner party, for an example, and if there are a cluster of librarians there, it's the librarians that seem to bring the most vibrancy to the discussion. And I like that. It's been a great life, a great profession.
I tear up all the time. I want to give thanks to Linda Williams and Bill Gordon and M. Claire Knowles. I want to give special thanks to Kim and Mark and the whole development team for helping us to begin to pull this together. Among the things that you're going to see as we transform this video, a little bit more focus on the why you should invest in the Legacy Society to the benefit of ALA, a little bit more on of the how. We know we asked each of you to bring your wills with you today, so we could, but if you are interested in talking about the Legacy Society, we are interested in talking with you. We're going to carry this out over the next 3 years, and this is all about the future of us and the future of this association. So thank you for listening, and thank you for helping us with this work in progress.
Microphone number 3.
Before you go, Jim.
Terry Kirk, Kentucky Chapter Counselor, and I just think the video was awesome, and I too got all teared up. But I'd like to add, since you are working with it,
yes,
if I could just add one little spot in there when they said that the library's down the street or around the corner. Could you say it's down the hall in my school?
Absolutely. Yep. That is so noted. And also, we'll also put across the campus. How's that? Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you for looking. Oh, I'm sorry.
Microphone to number 5.
Christine Haig, PLA counselor. Where will this video be housed? Will we be able to share it with staff?
Yes. Do give us a little bit of time to make some edits and improvements in it. We also are planning to tailor it. We're looking for opportunities so we can bring a division and roundtable leaders into some of these clips, so that we can tailor it to particular audiences as well. So we've done it in a way that I think it is flexible and to be used with a variety of audiences. But our goal is to make it available as much as possible for you to use in your worlds as well.
Microphone number 5.
Susan Schmidt, LTAF counselor. While you're editing, we'd like to make sure that you include friends, trustees, and advocates, and reaching out to them as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your report, Jim, and for showing the video and bringing us all to tears again. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document 10.1. I'm actually thinking the photographer is going to be here at 10. Okay, the photographer is here. John, would you be all right if we do the... We need to do the photograph of the retiring counselors. So if the council would agree, I would like to read the names of the retiring counselors and take a break for long enough for people to have the picture taken in a few minutes, and then we'll come to John's report. Is that acceptable to everyone? Okay. Just a minute. Okay. Before we take a 15-minute break, I would like to recognize our retiring colleagues, most of whom have completed 3-year terms. After being recognized with the retiring counselors and executive board members, please step over to where the photographer is. I assume that's at the back over in this area. We already have chairs lined up, apparently, so that you can have a group photo. I would like to acknowledge with thanks the ALA executive board members whose terms will expire with the adjournment of this conference. They are Patricia M. Hogan, who could not be here, an executive board member. She had a minor medical issue that prevented her from coming. She's okay, but she's not here. Stephen L. Matthews, ALA executive board member. And I saw Steve here. Stand up and get recognized. Courtney L. Young, ALA executive board member, elected as a counselor at large and will remain on council. Roberta A. Stevens, ALA immediate past president. Please also recognize our retiring counselors. They are Rosie L. Albritton, counselor at large. Jose Aponte, counselor at large. Mario Asensio, counselor at large. Valerie Bell, counselor at large. Daniel Berdaner, IRRT counselor, was reelected and will remain on council. Kay Bowes, counselor at large. Did I pronounce that correctly, Kay? Thank you. Stephanie Brownstein, counselor at large. Nick H. Baron, ELSA counselor. Steve K. Butzel, New Hampshire chapter counselor. Angela Kartstensen, counselor at large. Sorry, I'm having name challenges today, I guess. Annalisa R. Cruz, counselor at large. Linda S. Dobbs, counselor at large. Aaron W. Dobbs, counselor at large, reelected and will remain on council. Nanette W. Donahue, counselor at large. Vicki M. Emery, counselor at large, elected as AASL counselor and will remain on council. Rosario Garza, counselor at large. Carolyn Jambra, counselor at large. Judith A. Gibbons, counselor at large. Maybe we should hold our applause to the end, but if the members would stand up when I call your name so people can at least see you. Did I do Thomas Gilson, counselor at large? Sorry. Michael A. Goldrick, counselor at large. Mario Gonzalez, counselor at large, reelected and will remain on council. Rhonda K. Putney Gold, ALSC counselor. Carolyn Gray, Texas chapter counselor. Tracy D. Hall, counselor at large. Ann H. Hamilton, Georgia chapter counselor. Pamela J. Hickson Stevenson, Ohio chapter counselor. Sarah Kelly Johns, AASL counselor, reelected and will remain on council. James J. Johnston, Connecticut chapter counselor. Al Kagan, CERT counselor, reelected and will remain on council. No one's standing up anymore. No, you're supposed to stand up, and then we'll clap at the end. If you all didn't stand up, okay, I'm sorry. M. Kathleen Kern, RUSA counselor. I'm going to look up and see if someone's actually standing up. There you go. Majed Cotter, is that right? This is wrong. Did I pronounce it right? Close enough. That's what I always say about my name. West Virginia chapter counselor. Amber D. Matheson, Arizona chapter counselor. Susan G. Miller, counselor at large. Vicki Mix, South Dakota chapter counselor. Virginia Jenny B. Moore, counselor at large, reelected and will remain on council. John Mormon, IFRT counselor, reelected to the ALA executive board and will remain on council. Patty Myers, Wyoming chapter counselor. Maren Ostergaard, counselor at large. Gina Persicini, thank you, I'm sorry. I can't get those names. Persicini, right? Idaho chapter counselor. Jennifer Pickle, counselor at large. Joanne Pinder, counselor at large. Eva Poole, counselor at large. Cher Ravani, Washington chapter counselor. Pete Reeling, it's the multiple round tables, EMIRT, ERT, FA Fuffler, Learn RT, all those ones. Counselor, all the smaller round tables. Kevin Reynolds, Tennessee chapter counselor. Kevin is also on the ALA executive board and he will remain on council. Donald Rolquam, Illinois chapter counselor. Elena Rosenfeld, Colorado chapter counselor. Ronald Russ, Arkansas chapter counselor. Mary Ripzinski, Michigan chapter counselor. Gail Schlachter, counselor at large, reelected and will remain on council. Vicki Lee Schmar, counselor at large. Debbie Short, Utah chapter counselor. Patricia H. Smith, counselor at large. Gail Tobin, counselor at large. Ben Trapskin, Minnesota chapter counselor. Pat Weaver Myers, Oklahoma chapter counselor. Shijing Wen, counselor at large. Nancy Ann Wilson, Vermont chapter counselor. Diane Wu, counselor at large. Diane Zabel, counselor at large. And Nancy P. Zimmerman, counselor at large. So now we will take a 15-minute break. Would all the retiring counselor and executive board members' names who I just read go first to the back for a picture, and that's even if you're continuing, you still go for the picture because you're completing your term, and we will reconvene at 10:20. You get quiet so quickly.
You command.
But I'm looking for John. Oh, he's here. I'm sorry. Okay. All I asked them to do was go to their seats, not be too quiet. Thank you, everyone, for so quickly coming back to your seats and getting ready to carry on with our business. And I'm stalling for time so John won't have to run. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document 10.1, through Council Document 10.4 and calls upon Councilor John A. Moorman, Chair of the Policy Manual Revision Task Force, to present his report. John?
Thank you. Our task force has a 2-year term. We are reaching the end of that term, thankfully, and we have a document for Council action. You have the final report of our task force in front of you. There are several things I'd like to highlight in that report. First, a reminder that any policy manual over time becomes a fragmented document as new policies inserted, old policy deleted, wording adjusted to reflect organizational changes, and changes in the society the or entity represents. In addition to policy changes, procedures tend to be inserted as well. You can see our approach. Most of this document you saw at midwinter as an interim report. What I'm doing now is simply presenting to you the final work of the task force. The task force was fully aware of the dangers inherent in any undertaking such as ours and spent considerable time assuring that any action taken did not make new policy or change the intent of valid current policy. If you did not like a policy in the current manual, you will not like that same policy where it is found in the new one. I emphasize that Council has examined the task force work prior to ALA midwinter and was given the opportunity to suggest additions and corrections. Comments received during this process were discussed at the task force meetings during the 2012 midwinter meeting. With corrections and additions, a draft copy with changes highlighted was presented to Council in May 2012 for comments and suggestions with a deadline of June 4, 2012 for their receipt by the task force. All comments and suggestions were incorporated into the final documents you have now, and you also saw an ALA Connect prior to this meeting. I would like to emphasize that we are not responsible for all the forests that we have killed with some of the material in the back. We tried to make it as electronic as possible. What you have in front of you is a new policy manual. Proposed Section A contains sections dealing with organizational and operational policies. Proposed Section B contains sections expressing ALA positions and public policy statements. Material in some sections was moved to other areas to enhance the continuity and readability of the ALA policy manual. Some sections no longer exist as they were seen to contain outdated policy or work repetition of material found elsewhere. And I would like to emphasize that in your packets, you have a crosswalk, which lets you see where in the current manual a certain policy is and where it is in the new manual. And I would particularly like to express appreciation to Aaron Dobbs, task force member, for making this possible. And it's done in several ways, old to new, new to old. So you have a good way to track the changes we have put together. I would like to emphasize that Section 6.4 of our current policy manual, which is the operating agreement between ALA and its divisions, has been removed and placed in an appendix to Section A of the proposed new ALA policy manual. This is to make sure everyone understands what it is, that it is separate from the two sections, and I can assure you that we did no changes to it, except in a few cases where we found spelling errors in one grammatical phrase, we did take the liberty of changing that. I would like to emphasize that we recognize that any thorough revision of a document of the age and importance of the ALA policy manual is never a finished product. The task force is certain that as individuals refer to and use the manual, additional comments will be forwarded to the Policy Monitoring Committee for its review and possible incorporation into the manual. I want to also thank those members of the task force and ask that they stand as I recognize them: Deidre Conkling, Linda Sue Dobb, Aaron W. Dobb, Sarah Pritchard, and Barbara Stripling. And Lois Ann, stand up because you were vital to the work of this task force. I would like to say that the task force feels that you have a new document in front of you, which makes it easier to refer to the various policies of ALA and its organization and operational structure. With that, I would like to move adoption of ALA Council Document 10.1 and 10.2 and be open to any questions that you might have.
Is there discussion? I think this indicates the there's no discussion, which means your process got all that discussion out on the floor. And you can see how council feels about that. We do need to vote. This is a substantive matter, so we do need to vote to on this issue. So would all those in favor of adoption of the policy manual revision, document 10.1 and 10.2, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed?
We are able.
Just kidding.
Oh. Thank you, Aaron.
The motion passes, and with extreme gratitude expressed by the chair from all of the faces that I'm seeing in front of me, this is a thanked task, but one that many, many people will never say yes to being asked to do it. So to you and your committee members, thank you.
I would also like to note that you have in your packet Council Document 17.1, which is a report to Council of Policy Monitoring Committee. As at midwinter, Council took no actions that needed to be inserted or deleted from the policy manual. This is our report.
So did I, and I also forgot once again, thank you again, John, to say mark your ballots on that last vote. Mark your ballots, 10.1 and 10.2. No, it was one vote. We adopted them all together. So just mark it. Mark your ballots, 10.1 and 10.2, and then one vote, because we took it as one vote. The chair now directs you to ALA Council Document 18.1 and calls upon Charlie Zhang, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to present her report. Charlie?
Thank you. Good morning. You have received a committee written report, so I just would like to take a few minutes to provide you several highlights of international activities since January this year. At this conference, we are very pleased to welcome 430 international librarians from 83 countries to this conference. LA also was honored that IFLA President Ingrid Perron was in attendance. She spoke at several LA events, and several other IFLA governing board members were also in attendance. They provide us with IFLA updates. The committee would like to thank the leadership and the members of the International Relations Roundtable, RRT, for all of their efforts to make this conference a great experience for our international colleagues. RRT hosted a pre-conference for international librarians, staffed the International Visitor Center, provided mentorship and orientation for the international visitors. This evening, if you still have ticket, the LA International Librarians Reception will be held at the museum. It will be a great opportunity for us to meet our international colleagues. At this event, the four international library projects will receive 2012 LA Presidential Citation for innovative international library projects. Those library projects are from Indonesia, Hong Kong, Guatemala, and Finland. At this conference, LA units organized and presented more than 20 programs and events on international theme. In addition to attendance this year, the big number of international librarians were also invited to speak at several different programs. In inviting international speakers to share their experience and best practice at the LA annual conferences is one of the goals of 2015 International Strategic Plan. IFLA nomination. The committee has started the process of nomination of LA members who wish to serve on IFLA committee 2013 through 2017. LA members have played an important role in serving IFLA, so we hope that LA members will continue their efforts on the international level. This Barbara Ford, LA representative to the U.S. Commission of UNESCO, provide the written report which is attached to this report and in attachment. She shared with us the status of U.S. funding for UNESCO. The U.S. stopped funding for UNESCO in late 2011 when the international agency admitted Palestine into its membership. Ms. Ford will also continue to provide updates to us and COL and OIF on this issue. International Relations Office mailed the first issue of LA International Direct, which is a bi-monthly newsletter. Its goal to increase communication with our international members and customers. Thanks to support from LA members and others, LA will be able to provide support to reopen Patikov Public Library in May this year in Haiti. Yes, yeah, it's already provided. The community has been without a library for over 2 years since the devastating earthquake in January 2010. To date, LA has raised over $60,000 to help reopen three libraries in Haiti. LA leadership has continued efforts to reaching out to our international colleagues around the world. Since January this year, President Molly Raphael participated in international conferences and events in Brazil, Mexico, and Canada, and to speak to library colleagues there. Thank you, Madam President, for your outreach efforts on behalf of the association. President-elect Maureen Sullivan will focus on her international activities on three areas: strengthening LA's work with Sister Libraries Program, exploring a partnership with Peace Corps, and a webinar for international members. The committee would like to recognize the LA Publishing and its efforts in making e-content on LA Store accessible to international members and customers. Now the LA Store is able to receive payments for e-contents from outside the United States. The committee wished to express its appreciation to Mr. Marco Darling, International Relations Office Director, for his outstanding support and assistance to the association's international activities, programs, and service. This concludes my brief report. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Is there any discussion? Microphone number four.
Al Kagan, Surat Councillor. I'd like to address the issue of UNESCO. I believe that ALA is on record in favor of the U.S. rejoining UNESCO after the U.S. pulled out. I think it was around 1980 or the early 1980s. And I think that policy is probably still on our books. And I'd like to see the Washington office of ALA lobby to restore the U.S. dues to UNESCO. And I suggest that maybe we need another resolution coming from the IRC at midwinter to that effect. And I suggest that to the committee.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Maggie Farrell, ACRL. Councillor Shelley, TCEs have, traditional cultural expressions have found a bit of a home in the International Relations Committee. Could you bring us up to date? It was my understanding you were working on a program, and if I missed that in your report, I apologize.
Right. After you leave the committee, we are still in the planning for program. And also at this conference, there is a program. It's outside. We didn't get into it, but there is a program. Three parties talk about their perspectives. So I'm sure the membership did get information on that through that program.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
You're welcome.
And thank your committee as well. We will now take up new business. These items will be discussed in the order in which they were submitted. As you recall, the resolution that school libraries and librarians are critical to education success, membership document number 7, now called council document number 41, was adopted by the ALA membership meeting on Saturday, June 23rd, and forwarded to Council 1, where its discussion was postponed until council meeting today. I will now move the resolve clauses. Just a second, I had this here. Oh, it's from yesterday. That's the problem. Sorry, I should have this at my fingertips. I need the back. Thank you. I will now move the resolve clauses of ALA Council Document Number 41, resolution that school libraries and librarians are critical to education success as it is displayed on the overhead. I will read the resolve clauses and then I will recognize Sarah Kelly Johns, who is the mover of this motion for an act for a proposal. Resolve that the American Library Association directs the ALA Presidential Task Force to lead the association in its continued mission to address the urgent need for advocacy for school libraries, school librarians, and the impact of the deprofessionalization and curtailment of school library instructional programs on students and student achievement, continuing to engage librarians of all types from across the association to advocate for school libraries, which are imperative to the survival and success of all libraries, encourages state associations and affiliates to influence legislation requiring adequate funding and appropriate staffing of school libraries in schools at all levels, places a high priority on seeing that upcoming ESEA legislation recognizes and specifically supports the necessity for effective school library programs and credentialed school librarians, works to encourage federal lobbying efforts to include school libraries in legislation and regulations, including areas such as digital literacy and broadband, and will actively seek partnerships with national associations to reach mutual goals of sustained school libraries. I call upon microphone number 3. I'm sorry. The chair of the resolutions committee is waving his hand, and so I will recognize him.
You asked me last time. I assume you're going to ask me this time if there are any policy
implications.
Yes,
thank you.
This would require no changes in policy.
Thank you very much, Larry, for reminding me that I did need to ask that question. Now I call upon microphone number 3, Sarah Kelly Johns, Councillor Kelly Johns.
Sarah Kelly Johns, AASL Division Councillor. As the mover of this resolution, I have consulted with my seconder, Cindy Cizak, and we would like to move that the resolution that was adopted at the membership meeting be replaced with the resolution that was sent out last night and distributed today with 4 changes. And I would be glad to point those out to you.
So let me explain to council, in case anyone is confused, what this is, how this is. We wanted to go through the process of putting the membership resolves on the floor, because this was a membership, it was a resolution that came through the membership meeting. What Councillor Johns is proposing at this time is that we will substitute the revised motion that you all received earlier. So we will be voting first on the substitute motion. So if you really like the original motion better, that would mean you would not want to substitute the motion. Then we will go back to the main motion, which will be the substitute if it passes, and then we can have discussion on that as well.
I really appreciate the opportunity that has happened between yesterday and today to revise this language up until about 3 minutes ago. It has been it has gone to committees, task forces, and the task and divisions, and received language right from this floor, including yours, John, is in here. Thanks to our able staff. The first change is underneath the bullets, and it is whereas. School quality school law, and it's really a grammar change thanks to Nancy Zimmerman. Whereas quality school library programs staffed by credentialed school librarians prepare students to have the 21st century skills they need to succeed in college and career. They are particularly critical to help close the achievement gap of students who come from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. So that's a rearrangement of that paragraph. The next change is the last whereas before the resolve, and in the third sentence from the end, that members of ALA have an obligation to help ensure that every child in America receives a strong foundation in literacy and, I can't read my own writing, and civic values such as intellectual freedom. And that one is also up there being highlighted. And in the resolves, two very minor changes. One is that the American Library Association directs the ALA Presidential Task Force on School Librarians. They felt like the only task force this year, but there are others, so we've needed to name the actual task force. And then in resolve number five, actively seeks, had to add an S to that, actively seeks partnerships, and that is for a parallel structure, a grammar caucus, of which I am a member, noted that. So I ask that the motion is that you would accept the substitution of the revised resolution that school libraries and librarians are critical to educational success that is before you.
Yes, I was just about to do this too. I want council to understand that you're passing a resolution. The whereas clauses are part of that, but the resolve clauses are what you're actually voting on, and the revisions to the resolve clauses are really relatively minor and frankly could probably even be covered by the housekeeping responsibilities that we allow the executive director to do by policy action. So I want to just make sure everyone is clear. This is kind of a complicated process, but we're trying to, is there anyone who is not clear on what we're asking or we're going to ask you to vote on? Okay, so I'm sorry, microphone number eight.
This is Jessica Scalf, chapter counselor from Virginia. One more time. Are we going to vote for the one from the membership first?
No.
It stood before?
Okay.
Just say it one more time.
Okay. So what Councillor Johns has done is she has moved a substitute. So we have to vote on the substitute first. So this, if you vote yes on the substitute and it passes, then we'll go and actually vote on the motion that she has introduced as a substitute. So we're going to vote to allow the substitution or not. And then if we allow it, then we'll actually vote on the main motion. If we vote not to allow the substitution, then we will go back to the membership motion.
Okay.
Is that clear? Everybody okay? Okay. I'm sorry. Microphone 5.
Brian Schottlander, Elects Division Counselor. So the document that we have that's labeled CD41 Revised 62412 doesn't actually include the text that you read.
It does, but it has just been rearranged.
It's just been rearranged.
Yeah, well, it's the same word. It's just there now in two sentences instead of one extremely long sentence.
Maybe you'd better read the two sentences again then.
Would you like me to?
It's not in here.
Yeah, can we zoom in on that?
Okay, so let me start with the resolve clauses, okay? The resolve clauses of the membership motion are really just grammar and editorial cleanup parts. So they're relatively minor. Relatively. Doesn't mean you can't vote against them, but they're relatively minor. The whereas clauses, there have been some additions and deletions that you received a document. Sarah has added some to that. So if you are comfortable with moving with the substitute document, then we can actually discuss some of the additions that she's proposing in that and go back and clean that up if there are concerns about it.
Okay.
So you're going to do two things. You're going to vote whether or not to substitute. And if you vote yes and it passes, then we discuss the substitute motion. So if you have issues with some of the substitutions that she's proposing now to the written document you received, we can discuss that after it passes the substitute motion, because then we will be discussing the motion itself, and that will be a second vote. Microphone number 6.
Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. Madam President, just as a point of order, I just want to make sure that all the counselors have the actual document with all the stricken material. There is some rumbling in the back that everybody did not receive the edited version that we're going to have conversation on.
Okay, so you should have a document that has different colors on it, and it's buff colored, and it says at the top, underscoring means additions, strike through means deletions. That underscoring means is in blue, strike through and deletions is in red on the document. So if you have a document that doesn't have three different colors of print on it, so we're getting copies now. If you do not have a copy as I described it, would you raise your hand so Lois Ann can see? Everybody has the document now that has three different colors of print on it. Okay, this is the substitute motion with what Sarah has added, but you will have an opportunity to deal with not only what's in the substitute motion, but also what Sarah has added at the end here, if you vote to do this as a substitute motion.
Yes.
And that's the first vote. Okay? So is everyone ready for the vote? Okay, this is a vote to substitute this motion as this is the amendment. It's a substitute. Okay? So all those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. We are now, okay, first mark your ballots, Council Document Number 41, Revised 62412, sub. Yes. Council Document Number 41, Revised 62412, sub. We are now discussing the document with the membership document is gone. We're now discussing the three-colored document. And Sarah has proposed some additional changes to that document. And I will now ask you to do that. And do we have this on the screen?
Well, they have the changes are there. They just have to bring it back to the screen.
Okay.
bring the substitute document back to the screen. And I thank you for making that change, that substitution.
While we're waiting, microphone number four.
Mine's a grammar, Sue Camp, Counselor at Large. In the second whereas from the bottom, the way it reads is, in its response, the Obama administration acknowledged that.
Cool.
And I don't know if this, there's a phrase that is stricken through, but does the sentence, school libraries do more, much more, et cetera, is that supposed to follow the quotation that has been removed?
Yes, that's my understanding is this was a quotation from the letter, from the response to the petition, and it's striking the first part of that response to the petition.
Okay.
Is that correct, Sarah?
So the quotes will start.
The quotations will be there in front of school libraries do much more.
Yes.
Microphone number five.
Deidre Conkling, Counselor at Large. What I have to say won't matter what the language is, okay? I've been directed by the Committee on Legislation to make a short comment here. COL supports the spirit of this resolution and therefore is not asking for the resolution to be referred to COL. But the customary practice when bringing resolutions with legislative implications to Council is to first have them actually reviewed by COL. In this instance, resolve clauses 2, 3, and 4 all have legislative implications and are giving direction to the ALA Washington office. We have the opportunity to benefit fully from the expertise of the committee and staff who have great knowledge in the areas of working with legislative issues, and we should use these resources.
Thank you. Microphone number four.
Stephanie Bronstein, Louisiana Chapter Counselor and Punctuation and Grammar Police member. If we're going to make that all one sentence, whereas in its response, comma, the Obama administration acknowledged that school libraries, school should now be lowercase.
Yes. Thank you for that. That's
microphone number five.
Ann Crudson, Counselor at Large. I just wanted to thank the authors of this resolution for bringing school librarians to the fore again. It's important to know that they're going through that it's an ongoing battle and that their jobs and their respect remain constantly under question. And as a public librarian, I know that I'm increasingly getting more and more people expecting us to do the jobs of school librarians. Well, I don't have the professional expertise as a school librarian, and I'm a public librarian, so that means I know just enough to get me in trouble. So I just want to say that I really appreciate it, and also that I fully support the second resolve about encouraging state associations and affiliates to influence their legislators, because I know that the budgets are being cut and Library Legislative Day is getting least very little importance it's the means in which we could talk to legislators and help the school librarians, and I feel that it gets pushed under the table. So thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number two. Microphone number two.
I'm sorry. Kathy Parsons, Iowa Chapter Council Representative. I would like to say the Iowa Library Association supports this resolution. We have been a state that had our school librarians taken out of our code. It happened for many years. Our decline in achievements and proficiencies were very obvious. We were able to get it back into the code, but every legislative year we face the potential of that going out of the code. So I want to go on record that the Iowa Association does support this.
Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large, and as a retired school teacher librarian and retired public librarian, school librarians or teacher librarians are an endangered species in both Canada and the United States. What I hear from my colleagues who are still practicing is a concern with their longevity. and or taking early retirement, many of them because they feel they'd better get out before they're pushed. And it's so unfortunate because all of the literature, all of the surveys that have been taken prove that children need their school librarians in order to improve their literacy. You take the school librarian out of the mix, you might have a library with nobody that takes care of it, and the literacy counts go down. This is proven in every survey that has been taken. It's a no-brainer. However, both the unions for the teachers and the counselors in the cities or the legislatures in the states seem to think that the school librarian can be the first target for funding cuts. I hope we can reverse this.
Thank you.
Thank you for the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Karen Downing, Counselor at Large. I would like to speak in support of this resolution. As an academic librarian, I can definitely tell, and as can my colleagues, the difference in students who come to us who have had school librarians in their schools and those who have not. And anything we can do to support the continuation and strengthening of school library programs is a good thing, and I think this resolution in particular is a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Nick Buron, YALSA counselor. This resolution is extremely imperative, and it's, I had put here, well-written. It's even better well-written now and very colorful. And it addresses a very tragic trend for librarianship. On behalf of the YALSA board, the YALSA board endorsed this wholeheartedly. And also, I just would like to say, Rhonda Putney, the ALSE counselor, who is not here at the moment, who had to leave, has asked that I make sure that everyone know that the ALSE board has also endorsed this as well. So thank you very much for the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone six. Yes. Go to the mic, please, Larry.
I don't know of anybody who is not going to be for this. If you are just preaching to the choir, let's take less time and move on.
Point of personal. Nick Buron, YALSA counselor. I absolutely agree, and I think, though, just as we just heard from our good friends at COL, it's very important to make sure that we know that the professionals that are addressing these issues are heard from. Thank you.
Microphone six.
Thank you, Maggie Farrell, ACRL counselor, speaking in favor. But I want to note that the ACRL board has fully endorsed this, again reiterating the comment that good school libraries make for excellent students in our college and university. So we see this as a true life education issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Daniel Verdaguer, International Relations Roundtable, and I would like to say that the IRT fully endorses and supports the school libraries.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor, the Pennsylvania Library Association endorses this resolution, and we are also willing to work with the authors of the resolution to help aid in some of the partnerships, including with the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, who have also stated that they are very interested and eager to see school librarians come back into the schools.
Microphone five, but I believe you've already spoken.
I have, although this was for me personally, but I would like to recommend you do number three. Sarah didn't get a chance to speak to the resolution.
Sarah?
Thank you, Deirdre and Molly. Yes, I would like to speak to this resolution to thank all of the various divisions who have endorsed this, including beyond the ones that you have heard from, ALTAF, Chapter Relations, and PLA. and I'd like to make sure that that is known. And I really feel that this resolution will be very powerful for school librarians and for, I heard from a concerned grandmother who wanted to, did not want her children to be in a school without school librarians because they decided to hire wellness advisors instead. And this is a powerful statement that all of ALA is ready to work on behalf of school librarians, that there will be processes developed that will make a difference for the for all libraries when school libraries are strengthened. So thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Dennis LaLuca, Councillor Large. I just want to say thank you very much because I do think the timing on this is wonderful. After Carl Harvey's efforts with ASL and with what he did, and then this, I think it's very needed. And if it's one thing I've learned this year after being president of the Indiana Library Federation, that even though we're all, you know, we're all librarians, we work in different facilities and we have different situations, but we're all librarians, we're one and we're strong. And when one of us is hurt or goes down, it does affect all of us to a certain degree. And so I think probably what I've said has already been said, but I just want to say I'm very appreciative of this.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Roberta Stevens, ALA, immediate past president, and I want to request that special consideration be given to advocating for the school libraries in the continuation of Molly's efforts by Maureen for community involvement in advocacy.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Brian Schottlander, elects division counselor. I just want to join my colleagues Karen Downing and Maggie Farrell in saying how supportive we academic librarians are of this resolution. Small observation, the third whereas clause includes reference to these student educational gains, which I believe are actually articulated in whereas clause number four. You might want to think about reversing the order of those two whereases.
Thank you. Microphone number four.
Maureen Sullivan, ALA president-elect. I just want to pick up on what Roberta said and make sure everyone in this body knows the deep commitment I have to carrying this forward. And what I especially like about the way the resolution has been framed is it gives us a strategic framework in which we're going to be able to work. And I've already started to plan with the co-chairs of this task force a session in which we can actually do this. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Now I get to speak for myself. Deirdre Conkling, member at large. I do support the resolution, but I did want to make some comments that I don't want them to seem negative. I want them to seem moving on past this. I know that in Oregon we are constantly trying to stop the elimination of school librarians, and we've not been successful at all. We have been able to get related legislation passed, though not funded. We just incorporated the Struggling School Librarians Association into the Oregon Library Association. There were many reasons for making this change, but one was so that we could provide a lobbyist for school libraries and librarians, something that they had never had. It was felt that we can do even more with legislation by doing this. Our ACRL divisions started a letter-writing campaign to a large local school district ready to eliminate school librarians. Public librarians have often attended and made strong presentations at school board meetings using much of the information that was found in the first version of the resolution that we got. Some of that has been cut from this version. But I think we are frustrated and not sure what to do next. What I'm saying is we've already done many of the things that are in the resolve clauses. So I hope that the presidential task force will be able to come up with more advocacy and actions that go beyond this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Karen Downing, counselor at large. I'm hopeful that we're about to pass this resolution, and I'd like to suggest that each and every one of us send a copy of it to our local school boards.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone, seeing someone approaching the microphone. Microphone three.
Larry Romans with a red face. The language in resolve number one, it doesn't read correctly. It actually is nonsensical as it stands, although we know what it means. I think that we can consider this a housekeeping issue, but can she read her
question? Let's hear what the language issue is so we can decide whether it's a housekeeping issue or not.
Adrian Lim, lead a counselor. I just noticed that when we say to lead the association in its continued mission to address the urgent need, we then seem to be saying to address the urgent need for advocacy for the impact of the deprofessionalization. Do you see how it's not parallel though? There, we're addressing the urgent need for advocacy for school libraries and school librarians, and then also saying to address the impact of the deprofessionalization. It's not clear there as to where the break applies, if you know what I mean. It's more a grammatical issue.
It's a grammatical issue. Does the council feel this is a cleanup issue? It is in the resolve clause, so it's important that there be no one who has concerns about it.
Yes. Thank you. I thought it might be housekeeping, but just wanted
no,
to
it's sure. Important that you bring it up, because the resolve clauses really stand as the resolve clauses, so thank you. Are you stepping away? Are you ready for the vote? All those in favor of the substitute motion, as you see it on the screen, with the resolve clauses with the minor changes in them, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. Council document number 41, revised 6/24/12. We will now move to the new business item that we added to the agenda on annual conference programming. I'm going to give a little bit of background on this. We have no resolution, so it really is for a discussion so that people can raise issues. You have the document. I realize some of you who have not seen it before may have not had time to read it and thoroughly digest it. So this is a conversation at this point. Issues that come up later are ones that we can address on Connect. Let me give you a little background. This has been an ongoing process, and frankly, I think you should always think of conference as a work in progress. We have made many, many changes over the years, different kinds of things where we've had no conflict periods, and then we've changed and done something different. We've tried moving membership meeting, lots of different kinds of things. So even as we move forward, this is a continuing work in progress. The feedback from conference goers has been the driver in what we're looking at in this document. What we're hearing from conference goers, and this goes back many years, is a real frustration at how sprawling a campus we have and how difficult it is to get from one program to another, even with the buses from Gale. That's an issue. And just also for your information, Gale does significantly contribute to the buses, but ALA does as well. Gale does not fund the entire cost of the buses. When we have a large dispersed campus, there are lots and lots of buses that are running all day for about 5 days. So it really looks also at some of the financial realities that we're looking at. We know that when we've been looking at annual conference that the net revenue we've been producing has been declining some over the years. It still produces net revenue, but it's not producing as much net revenue as it is before. And kicking in over $100,000 from ALA's budget to continue to support the buses does is the kind of thing that are the kind of revenue issues that are definitely a part of what we're talking about. We also, when we talk about the financial issues around this, are looking at the cost of space and also the audiovisual costs. And when Mary Gikas, who did a lot of work on this, this whole effort, and working with conference committee and others, conference services, conference committee, divisions and others, she reported a fact, I'm not going to get this exactly right, but it was something like Saturday morning there were, at 10:30, there were 32,000 seats available. Is that right? And 16,000 people coming to the conference. 16 and 8. Okay, I just, that's the, my father used to always say, my mother, when my mother talked, apply the coefficient of exaggeration. So there it is for you. Okay, so we had 16,000 seats available at programs, and we had 8,000 people attending the programs, just to give you a sense of how this has expanded. So these are the kinds of drivers that we're talking about. This is something that has been discussed and vetted by the conference committee. They have been working on it. Steve Matthews, who is a counselor and executive board member, has been chairing that committee for the last 2 years. And so I think Steve can be a resource to us in this discussion. We've also shared this document with divisions and roundtables. And they have, many of them have had it on their agendas during this conference for discussion. The general feedback has been that the steps that we are proposing, that we're looking at, everybody feels the need for some things like this, and the devil is in the details with these kinds of things, but everybody, at least the general feedback has been, yes, we need to find a way to make conference more of a really positive experience for conference goers and respond to these kinds of issues. And finally, something that you may not have been aware of, but in 2013, we plan to digitize the program content as much as possible, obviously with presenters giving us permission to do so. That means conference goers would get that as part of their registration, but others who couldn't come to conference for a fee would be able to have access to that content. And to do this, doing it at multiple locations is simply not possible for us. It is possible for us to do it if we have a campus where we can bring the programs together. I guess that's the background I want to put in front of you and also make you aware that there's a lot more detail in this document. We do also have Mary Gikas here, and if council permits it, we can have Mary speak to this. We could also have her available to answer some questions if we needed to. Obviously, Executive Director Fields is also would have be able to answer a number of questions. So with that background, let me open it. I know that there are several people who were interested in having discussion, so please come to the microphones, and I'll call on microphone number 4.
Al Kagan, CERT Counselor. Well, I think CERT is all for efficiency, and I think that it's great if we encourage various ALA units to do joint programs or even 3 units coming together to do a program. CERT actually did a joint program with ACRL this time, so we're in favor of those kinds of things, but they should be voluntary. And what we are most concerned about is point 2. And I also want to talk about point 4, but I think point 2 is the one that is really...
You're talking about on page 2 under changes, 2013
yes.
and beyond? Okay.
Yes, that's exactly right. Where it says that there would be a maximum number of programs that would be accepted. And it's... There's I would like to know the scale that we're talking about compared to the number of programs at this conference or the conferences in the last couple of years. Are we suggesting that we're going to have a massive scale down of programs or not? And then the second point is...
Al, if I might ask, if I could ask Mary Gikas to come to the microphone
yes.
to respond to that question, as
yes.
I have council agreement to allow Mary to speak. She's not a counselor.
Yes.
So, General, okay.
Yes.
Yes. One at a time. Stay at the microphone so you can ask the second question. Go ahead, Mary. Microphone 6.
Right. At the Chicago conference, and this is going to be specific to every single conference for a couple of reasons. For the sake of program planners and speakers, all the people who put massive effort into the delivery of content at conference, you want attendance at those meetings. It's discouraging to both program planners and speakers when they look out and see 50 people sitting in a room set for 200. So we're looking at both the capacity, the carrying capacity of the convention center, and the estimated attendance, which varies significantly from site to site. A Chicago conference is going to be significantly bigger than an Anaheim conference. A DC conference is going to be significantly bigger than an Orlando conference or a Las Vegas conference. So in the Chicago campus, we sat down just before this meeting and took a look. We laid out the floor plan. We looked at every meeting room that we're going to have access to in McCormick. We looked at every meeting space at the Hyatt McCormick, which so we'll treat those two buildings as one core campus. And we went through, we pulled out the space we needed for things like lunches, banquets, and the exhibit floor, the space for council, space for the executive board. And what we came up with was a rough number of about 300 programs, which is very close to what we have here. So we're not talking about anything that's enormously dislocating. We're by conference count, we're a little over 300 here. That number will probably be slightly smaller when we look at the Las Vegas campus, which we have not done yet. And so I don't know that number. But again, you're not talking about 50%, you know, you're not talking about massive changes. The bigger issue, to some sense, and this relates to the number that President Raphael gave you a minute ago, is that if you look at the schedule in detail and sit down and kind of lay out each meeting slot, what you see is that classic cartoon of the elephant moving through the python. And it's that elephant going through the python that drives a lot of the problems of conference. It's what causes new members to come up to me and say, do you mean I have to go over there and then come back here? So we need to figure out how to reduce the size, if not eliminate that elephant. And that means looking differently at how we work together and collaboratively to schedule things.
Is that Thank you. Now, number 4 again, please.
Thank you for that, Mary. And I that is a bit encouraging. And it sounds to me like we're talking about small percentages, maybe 5% or something like that. Would you agree to that, Mary?
She would nod at her head.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now the second point is, who's going to decide when we have 5% more programs submitted than the number of spaces available? This, I think, is a very important question because there are some programs that the conference committee will think will get large response, and there are some that will have smaller, distinct groups that are still very important and are very important to those groups, but may not be large attendance items for the conference committee to look at. And this is what I think bothers me the most, that somebody else may be able to decide, besides our roundtable, which programs would be accepted. And I'd like to know what you're envisioning for that kind of a vetting process.
Sure.
Mary, microphone's number six.
Thank you. Thank you. We're not actually proposing to make any changes in the program selection process. That process sits currently and will continue to sit in the 11 divisions, 19 roundtables, and some 30 other groups that currently provide content for the conference. But what we are doing is going to each of those groups and saying, could you aim your program selection process at about this number of programs? And we've had some back and forth conversations with the groups involved, particularly with the divisions, because such big chunks of content in terms of numbers of programs are coming from the divisions. So the conversation with the divisions has been, does 20 programs sound like that's a doable number for you? And is that close enough to what you're currently doing? Can your program selection committees work with that number? So the selection process, in terms of who selects the content coming into conference, stays exactly as it has. We're just trying to negotiate with all of the contributors of content on the quantity of the content coming in.
And a key word that she just said was negotiate. So this is voluntary, and what we're really doing is looking at particularly the large the units that do lots and lots of programming, asking them to take a look about reducing that sum. But right now it's a conversation that's going on with them, and we're getting some positive feedback from those conversations that yes, they think that number is a number that will be adequate for them.
So last night at Council Forum, we heard that one division currently has 81 programs at this meeting. 31.
That's the coefficient of exaggeration again.
All right, I thought I heard 81 last night, but the principle is the same. They have 31, but they're going to ask to be only have 20 next time. Now suppose that division decides, in fact, they want to have 25. What will happen?
Mary, did you want to respond to that? I think it's microphone six, but I'm not sure who's going to speak there. Go ahead, Aaron. Go ahead.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. Like I kind of sort of waxed eloquently babbling last night, the potential for new delivery channels for content is fabulous. ALA is going to be recording all these programs.
Get a little closer to the
microphone.
Are you serious?
You can't hear me?
Yeah. They adjust the microphone, so don't yell at us.
All right.
There you go.
I'll lean in. Hello. So where was I? Oh, yes. So as I waxed eloquently babbling about last night, there's a potential for a massive production of new delivery channels for ALA conference content. We have 20 programs. They're all going to be recorded, as we just heard, or as feasible, so I don't want to like put you on the spot for that. But so there's 20 recorded programs. Let's say LITA still has 31, like we do this time around. We have then a chance to look at all of our program proposals in the program process and say, we have 31 awesome programs that we want to do. We have 20 slots. We have 11 programs that we can monetize and put out as an extra benefit to our members and then offer to ALA members. This is actually doing us a favor in the end, and I hate to say monetize because it makes me feel like cheap. And then afterwards I want to talk about scheduling and some mechanics, but that's not germane to this piece of the conversation.
Right. So I'm also aware of other divisions that have done the same thing, is that they've looked at how they're delivering the content to their members and to the profession, and have encouraged groups that have been doing program planning that what they're doing might be better as a webinar rather than as a conference program and might reach more people. So this is again this negotiation dialogue that's happening, and this sounds like a very voluntary response from LITA taking a look at its programming opportunities.
I don't think my question was really answered. And let me make it more specific to our own roundtable. We have several task forces in our roundtable. Let's suppose that we want to do 6 programs in Chicago. And we are told, actually, we'd like you to do 4. And we decide, in fact, we really want to do 6. And we don't care about the other avenues that Aaron has given us. Well, then what's going to happen? There's 2 more programs. We say we're going to do them. We want to do these 6 programs. What will happen?
Okay. We'll do that last question, then I'd like to get other people asking questions as well. Mary, did you have a response to that?
Yes. My preference would be first to talk with the roundtable, but there are other options. We will continue because while we're down from our historic highs in terms of the number of separately scheduled events, which was in the neighborhood of 2,500, counting meetings, discussion groups, programs, and other stuff, it's still up in that 1,700, 18, give or take, a little bit higher, neighborhood. So we will have some things that are in hotels, and we're trying to shrink that hotel campus as much as possible and rationalize it for members as much as possible in terms of how we cluster things. But in fact, your option at that point, when I'm out of rooms at McCormick, I can't make more. So when I'm out of rooms, I'm out of rooms in that location, and that's where we'll digitize. That's where the real density will be. But we will have other rooms, and if you want to do a room in a hotel meeting room, we will accommodate you.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Microphone number 5.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large. About 10, 12, 13 years ago, there was an attempt to change the nature of the conference and make it more top-down programming and establish tracks, and you had to be in the tracks and all that sort of stuff. And I fought that tooth and nail because I was coming out of a division, and I wanted divisions to retain control over the content of the program on the whole. And Mary graciously negotiated with us, the division presidents at the time, and we came up with a sort of a compromise, and the conference planning committees were formed, and we got all the programming, and it was a representative group. It represented everybody, roundtables and divisions and everybody else, and we were able to actually let the tracks come out of the programming that was there. It turned out that the tracks repeated every year, so in fact, I was really pleased to see this because the themes that they've come up with are the traditional themes of the conference, and we've got about a 15-year history to show that. So I was ready to get my ire up again about this whole thing until I read it. And I think this is a pretty decent proposal and a good place to start. We do need to change things. And as much as I resist change in some things, I think this is probably going to be very good. My one question to Mary is when we get feedback from people from after the conference, approximately what percentage of people actually respond?
Microphone 6.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I can tell you I read literally hundreds of pages of text comments from members after the New Orleans conference. And a great deal of what's in this document came straight out of those comments.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Zora Sampson, Councillor at Large. I just want to encourage us to take advantage of some of the brilliant technology minds that we have in our divisions and use things like, I think we could get people to sign up ahead of time, give us an idea of what programs are going to attend so that we could match. It wouldn't be perfect, of course, but there are a lot of people that know how to do this, match rooms to attendance, and it might give us a heads up about whether we need to better advertise and things like that. So that could be done as a moving, rolling thing Aaron might want to say something to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Keith wants to add something here.
If I can comment on this, Marion, I'll take turns on some of these things just to, you know. The conference scheduler actually has allowed us to begin doing that, in that as people add sessions to the scheduler, we then have some information as to how many people have indicated they'd like to go. And that's already, I think that's impacted room selections in about a half dozen rooms at this conference. And I think we can continue to refine that. So it does just that.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. As a former programmer, now retired from programming, I hope, at these ALA conferences, what I really do want to stress, I like this positive, concrete document. It makes it very understandable, and now we can put out good information. But what I do urge for all of us, the conference planners really do need ongoing, updated education in how to fill out their forms. Because, for example, I noticed that they were putting in like 200 and they really only expected 50. Yes, it's embarrassing if you've got 50 people in a room for 200. But in addition, by trying to inflate, it's making it very difficult to fit both the programs that will have big attendance and the programs that will have intimate attendance into the conference convention space. And so I think some working with the conference planners in trying to be more targeted in their realistic expectations of how many will attend would really aid in matching and not wasting what we have available. Thank you.
Microphone two.
Carlin Gray, Texas Chapter Counselor. I'd just like to take this moment in time just to say that I really commend the efforts of this task force committee, this two-year study, and the efforts by the executive board to take into consideration the changes that need to be occurring. After we heard from the treasurer and we hear the needs that we have in light of the expenditures and the revenues that are not coming in, it seems to me that looking at programming is a huge thing, and I applaud the suggestions that are in this document.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Michael Goldrick, Counselor at Large. And before I make my comment on the overall document, I do want to comment on something that Keith mentioned. He mentioned the scheduler. And as somebody with the previous iteration of the scheduler would regularly crash it in advance of each conference, I just want to comment how wonderful the new scheduler is. And I hope that a lot of the features that are already in there continue. And I have communicated that to the person whose major responsibility is that scheduler. But I do want to make sure that that does continue, and I do understand that getting more information is important. Overall, one of my concerns, as somebody who has served on the executive board and was on the executive, my term ended 6 years ago, and we were talking about how conference was going to change. We were talking about compressing conference. This is not a new idea. It is not new news. What we're seeing here are details. Yet at the same time, it is my personal belief that those details are not the purview of this body, because council is to set policy. Executive board manages the association and its affairs in between council meetings, and the executive director and the staff are the ones who implement that. And so to me, this seems implementation. Now, I understand that a part of this, because we're working in an organization that has volunteers, and an awful lot of the content is organized by volunteers, there has to be communication. It's my understanding that this has been communicated well to the folks who are, in fact, doing programs. How many programs is council responsible for at conference? Zero. So this is not part of our job. So that is my concern, my observation. Thank you for letting me speak.
And let me say, we decided if there was time on the council agenda to do the to have this conversation today, because there were things that were bubbling up and there was a lot, seemed to be a fair amount of misinformation that was out there. We want you to have the document that is really what people are paying attention to, and we thought if we had time, having people be able to raise issues and ask questions would be useful. I want to just see if Councillor Matthews, who is the chair of the conference committee, has something that would enlighten this discussion. You're like third on the list for next in the microphone order. Do you want to?
That's fine.
Okay. Then microphone number four.
Sue Cam, Councillor at Large. In looking at the proposed content streams for next year, I am surprised that no space has been reserved for intellectual freedom or social responsibilities programs.
Thank you. Microphone number eight.
Paula Brumheger, Councillor at Large. I just wanted to say thank you for the document. I think it's very helpful. I would agree with some comments that I think Council would be well served by taking a higher level view of the changes. I think that the details can be worked out, though I do appreciate receiving them. I also have quite a bit of faith in our members that if we do support change, they will be incredibly receptive, and I think provide more innovative programs and come up with ways that this body could not think of on how to make sure that their voice is heard. So I would say that our members are well aware that resource-related decisions are tough, and they face that now more than ever. They will understand changes and, I think, embrace them. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Steve Matthews, a member of the Executive Board and Chair of the Conference Committee. I just want to indicate to you that this was posted on the Conference Committee Connect site about a week and a half ago, and we've had 932 views. So members are interested, and we're interested in hearing from members. The membership committee is the membership interface with what's happening with the conference. And so it's important that we get that input. People are interested, people are looking at it, and it's a good thing. And I want to emphasize two words here: co-created and proximity. And I'm thinking about what we just did with the school library's resolution. We're coming together as an association. And I think this model is evolutionary. It's not revolutionary, but it's moving forward, and it embraces the notion that change is what we need to be about. Transformation is what we need to be about, both ourselves and our community. And so I really believe these changes are something to get excited about. It doesn't mean we don't need to tweak them. We don't really need membership input into this. So please provide that. And as Mary said, as we were working through this, there are hundreds of responses that we look at, and they're incredibly interesting. And we try to factor that into what we do and how we put this together. I think we've got some exciting prospects, and we're in this together, and let's keep moving.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Shelby Harkin, North Dakota Chapter Counselor. I was on the Elex Planning Program Planning Committee. I've been doing Elex things since 1988. The cataloging, so on, that type of thing is not visible to me easily in the streams. I don't know what the subjects are going to be, but I would hope some of that is indicated. Some of the technical services areas, as program planning committee member, we often had a hard time even squeezing in the tracks that used to be used. So I hope that in the subjects somehow that some of those are considered, particularly in light of the fact ALA wants to sell RDA and people will be wanting to come to programs related to, you know, RDA, bibliographic transition, transformation, things like that, and I don't see a lot in the screens. Thanks.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large.
Can you
turn
the mic a little bit?
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large, just a couple of comments. One is, I think we should do our best to suppress a Ranganathan approach to programming, in that, you know, every librarian has his program. I think that what we see will be a higher quality of programming. Everything that I saw in these suggested changes said to me a higher quality of programming, which means better attendance at ALA. Another comment, I think the exhibitors will appreciate these changes, especially change number two, moving things to the convention center. But I would encourage also that we engage perhaps with the exhibits roundtable in gathering their feedback about some of these changes as well, because as we know, there's a lot of revenue that comes from the exhibit hall.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Diana Wu, a member at large. I don't know how many of you have heard about the first international virtual conference hosted by San Jose State University Library School last year. It's the first international conference held internationally across different time zones. And there were several hundred programs going on simultaneously. So I don't see why I really admire, you know, ALA. It's always at the forefront in setting the trend. So by providing this document, I think we are setting the trend again by considering offer more virtual programs so more people can attend, because attendance seems to be a big issue, not just budget issue, but many other issues. Let me give you an example of the attitude from junior librarians from my library. The chair of library faculty is proposing, starting this fall, we will be holding our all librarians meeting virtually. So even in the same library, the junior librarians are talking about holding meeting virtually. So this is really a good document to set the trend that we are committed to provide whatever technology is available to us to serve our members better. So I was very surprised to see number four says there will be 12 content streams. Only 12 content streams, you know, that's really a very small amount compared to the number of programs we are offering here. And I'm also very happy to see that all programs will be at the convention center, because I myself, you know, have been juggling between programs, you know, from one location to another. So I think this is a very good proposal to set forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Mary has a comment. Microphone six.
If I could respond to a couple of things that have been said here, if that would be helpful. First is that we did distribute this document ahead of conference to ERT. The ERT board did review this. ERT has been sharing this with their members, and we've had very positive response from the exhibitors. Second is I wanted to give you some insight into how we ended up with these content, what I call content buckets. As Councillor Wilding pointed out earlier, the conference coordinating team for each conference was doing some tracking, and those are very consistent tracks. And that's still fundamentally the structure that underlies this whole mass of content. The conference coordinating team made a decision and recommended to the conference committee that they stop tracking programs because the tags on the scheduler, from their point of view, were fulfilling that function for attendees. And the conference committee agreed with that decision. What we missed in that was the value of upfront framing for potential attendees. So what happened is that the conference staff came to me in about January and said, we have 300 and some programs here. How do you want us to list them in the preliminary program, alphabetically? And I said, well, I don't think so. That's not going to be really helpful to a potential attendee. So we looked at the Transforming Libraries discussion that had been ongoing between member leaders and the board, and took the language from those tracks for this year. We then in subsequent conversations with divisions and with division, particularly division staff, we modified those slightly. So if you look at that list, for instance, there's a
content bucket, shall we say, for systems and technology that was added at the request of Charles Wildt, who's the executive director of Alex. So these are really focused on marketing. What we're trying to figure out is how to take all of the good things that are coming from the divisions, the roundtables, the committees, and this includes both the programs officially and the unofficial things, all of those discussion and interest groups, and lay out a picture for a potential attendee that says, if you come to this conference, here's why it's important for you to be here. You're dealing with all of these massive changes in your library, and we're addressing them. We're talking about them. We're giving you things that will help you. But I need a way to describe that. So you need to look at this language as descriptive language to encourage attendance. Does that help?
Thank you. Microphone number two.
Xu Dongjin, Council at Large. I support the change by the annual conference committee. But however, I have some concerns and change what and how to change, make the changes. I remember the two numbers case reported and updated yesterday. It's conference attendance. AOA conference attendance 2 years ago, we had 18,000. And last year, we had 15,000. This year is 11,000. And another number is today about the budget. Our conference has a loss. Annual conference has a loss. So with all the changes, if the budget and the economy keeps the same, do we think we will get more or less attendance next few years? I have some questions. Well, I came late on Saturday afternoon when I registered. I only got this name tag. I don't have any conference schedule, that book. It makes me a big problem. I was told to search online catalog, online program. However, online program does not have a location, only have subject speakers. No location is there. I had a really problem. And Lois is so nice, give me one copy from the desk. So I think, agree, we need to make changes, but we need to focus on select qualified programs. We see some rooms still very full, but many rooms just have very, very few people. This morning I came to a program from 8 to 10, that program, but at 8:40 to 8:45, the program started to ask questions. That means that program really does not need 2 hours. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to remind Council that we are discussing something where we were trying to get some clarification. We have plenty of time left to continue to take comments, but we also are not taking a vote on anything. So we're not trying to persuade people to maybe one point of view because of the vote. And I just want to encourage you to comment, to sort of feed the people here who are dealing with conference with ideas that may be helpful in this process. As Mary said, it's a voluntary negotiated right now. So, microphone number six.
Aaron Dobbs, Councilor Large, Chair of the ALA Website Advisory Committee with a picture from the future. I mentioned this earlier, just to let everybody know what's kind of on the plans by the awesome Jenny Devine and the awesome ITTS team. Basically, what's going on is we have an ALA scheduler that's built on the same platform as Connect. If you're following Connect in a group, you will get an entry in there called an event. The event will have the initial day, room, time, etc., speakers, and all that. The scheduler then also pulls that. It's all pulled right out of the conference database. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. So it's a live database. You may or may not have noticed in today's paper printed program for ALA, this session started at 9:30. Go ahead and check your paper. It actually starts at 9, it's correct, as far as I know, but the paper says it starts at 9:30. At least someone told me that this morning, so I'm asking you guys to double check. That was updated in the scheduler. There is now a way to turn on email notifications for changes in conference venues, times, rooms, cancellations, etc. So this all happens through the scheduler. It's becoming more and more interactive, and someone was asking about planning for, you know, size of room. The key there is we're opening the planner. I believe it's going to be in February. And people can say, oh, that's something I want. And if they indicate that they plan to go to that, we're going to use that data to choose the size of the room for that program. So we're suddenly going to have a whole lot less open, empty seats that never get filled because we have twice the number of seats. I see that I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number 5.
Mario Gonzalez, Counselor at Large. Every year we reaffirm the programmatic priorities of ALA, and there are 8 key action items listed under that. I only see one of them in the content stream of the programs. So as we talked about on Council 1 in terms of focusing the association, I would not like to lose the fact that there are 8 program and key action areas that we vote on every year. The treasurer presented in his report earlier this morning, and only one of them, transforming libraries, is listed in the stream, in the content stream for the program. So I would like to suggest that we capture and do not lose, as we provide content stream for our members, the key programmatic areas of the association. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Microphone number 8.
Oh, okay. I'm Sue Sheriff, the Alaska chapter counselor, and I just want to express appreciation to the task force because number 3, the concentration of the conference in one location or a conference center in a hotel is something that is of great interest to my colleagues back in Alaska, probably, I would imagine, for the Hawaii counselors constituency and probably for international travelers, because we either personally or institutionally make a tremendous expenditure just to get to conference in the first place. And one of the number one complaints I've had from Alaskans who have ventured to conference, especially those who come for the first and maybe only time, is how do you get around? I missed so many meetings because I was stuck in traffic, and anybody who's been stuck trying to get from McCormick Place to Michigan Avenue in Chicago and Miami, I remember, was quite a logistical challenge. A lot of those people are discouraged. So having a vast number of programs, if they're not easily accessible, kind of defeats the purpose of the variety. So I really appreciate the attention that you've paid to comments like that. And I think that people that I will report back to will be very happy to learn that their suggestions and their concerns have been listened to. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Gladys Smiley Bell, Counselor at Large. I'm interested in affiliates' programming activities. Will they be governed under the same standards as what's in this document? Because I didn't see any wording about affiliates, particularly Black Caucus, since I represent Black Caucus in some way. We have a business meeting and we have literary awards. You gonna address? Okay, thanks.
Mary.
Thank you.
Microphone 6.
Right. We have not had meetings with the caucuses yet directly. Here's one way this could work. My assumption, kind of looking at this as I talk with various groups, is that we will hold some space at in the core campus for affiliate groups. But many of those groups actually want their meetings all concentrated in a single location. So depending on which group we're talking with, because different affiliates want their programming structured in different ways, there are affiliate organizations that work with us and say, we'd like to have a block of rooms in this hotel
We want some sleeping room set aside for our members. We want our board meeting there. We want most of our committee meetings there. They may want a high-profile program at the convention center. So we will work with individual groups to come up with something that works for them and for us.
Thank you. Is microphone four? Mike, are you?
Microphone four. I commend the task force, and I'm glad that we're working toward this. And hopefully there will be some, I guess I just wanted to reinforce what's been said about those programmatic goals that we vote for every year, and it's particularly intellectual freedom, but and the affiliates and the diversity caucus in particular, not just at blocks of rooms and hotels, but how that fits into the content stream if someone comes up with a program and there's no content stream to put it into. So I would just urge that that be given some more consideration and maybe either expanded or tweaked or in some way so that programs like the CERT does, but also like the IF does, Black Armbands program. I mean, I don't see where that would fit in the content streams, and I'm sure that was a huge draw. So anyway, just want to urge you to continue open negotiation and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, counselors, for your microphone four.
Hello, my name is Cindy Dodding, and I'm the NERT counselor. And one of the things I think that this is going to provide an excellent vehicle for is more collaboration, particularly among divisions and roundtables that are presenting the same kind of programming, our subject area, instruction, information literacy. I think it's a wonderful thing because we get to learn more about each other and present stronger programs in areas that we would normally not be so strong in. So thanks for a great document, and I'm sure it's a work in progress. Thank you.
And you summed it up very well. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Mary is here. Steve is here. I know he's about to no longer be chair of the conference committee, but I'm sure the information will be shared with them as well. And many of you are from divisions, roundtables, affiliates, and the various places that provide the programming. So I hope it was helpful to hear this discussion. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for announcements. Keith?
I'd like to report on conference attendance. And the numbers that I usually give you are the numbers for paid attendees. And we did not have sort of a traditional report. Mary brought some data, and we sort of played with it. So I'm going to just take a minute, and I will follow up with something in writing to talk about this whole issue, because again, we're into taking fresh perspectives at things. So if we look at paid registration, the paid registration for this conference was 11,850 registrants and 5,381 exhibitors for a grand total of 16,231. So that's the official number in the way that these numbers have been historically counted. Last year in New Orleans, we had 12,792 paid registrants and 5,269 exhibitors for a grand total of 18,061. So that shows us about 1,500 off in paid registrants, and that's reflected in the financial information that Jim discussed in terms of the budget. One of the things that doesn't get into this report is the exhibit hall complimentary passes, and these are passes that are distributed by exhibitors regionally so that a lot of people in the surrounding area are going to get them. And what we do is we only count the people that show up. So if an exhibitor gives somebody a pass and the person never shows up, then that doesn't get reflected. What's interesting is that for New Orleans, we had 1,981 people who came in on free exhibit passes, whereas this year we had 2,790, which is almost 1,000 more. So it's interesting, and I think this is reflected in the exhibit floor with the exhibitors, the total number of attendees, including the free exhibit passes, was 20,042 in New Orleans and 20,021 here in Anaheim. People also asked about the statistics for 2008, and in fact, in 2008, we did have a significantly larger number of paid attendees, which was 15,591. That's, about 3,700 more last time we were here. We had about a third of the exhibit-only type passes, about the same number of exhibitors, so the total figure would be 22,000 if you use the Mayan calendar. No, the standard method here. That figure would be have been about 20,000 as opposed to the 16,231. So that's probably too much data. But I think one of the things that was noticeable is certainly the exhibitors. I think were very pleased and the. Overall number of people, particularly on the exhibit floor, basically was quite similar to that in New Orleans.
Thank you, Keith. I think we have now some announcements. The first thing I would like to announce is that the Council Tellers Committee, would you please see Lois Ann at the projectionist table at the adjournment of this meeting? And microphone two.
Michael Golrick, Councilor at Large, and I'd ask for a point of personal privilege, if I may.
A little louder. Yes, okay.
Good morning. My name is Michael Golrick, and I'm a council junkie. This conference ends for me 16 years of service in this august body. I served as the Connecticut chapter counselor, a member of the executive board, and finally as counselor at large. In departing, I wanted to share a few thoughts about service on council and some of the changes I have observed over the time of my service. Council today is a very different body than it was when I started. There is a continuing false urban legend that people serve on council forever. That is simply not true. My friend and our colleague, fellow councillor Deirdre Conkling, has compiled a spreadsheet of those who have served on council over the past number of years. I think it's about 30 years. There's a very small number of people who have served more than 10 years. Because the length of term has shrunk from 4 years to 3 years, the average length of service on ALA Council is between 3 and 4 years. This means that most of the people who serve on Council serve for only one term. It is also my observation that Council is enjoyable for some, but clearly not the perfect cup of tea for many. There are a number of my professional colleagues and friends who have served on Council once and vow they will never serve again. On the other hand, I have also made some great professional friends in this room. Many of you are folks whose ideas and interactions have made me a better librarian and a better person. Back when I was first on council, there was a very different climate. Personal attacks took place both on the list and on the floor of council. That no longer happens. There are a number of us who have tried to make council more welcoming, and I hope that I have been able to contribute somewhat to that effort. When you stick around council for a while, you get to see interesting things. I had the temerity to offer a resolution at my very first council meeting. And it wasn't just about a little topic. It was when the state of Hawaii had outsourced all of its collection development, and some of us were horrified. I wrote a resolution. I made some good friends in that process, by the way. But with the rule of unintended consequences, there were complications. On the council floor, I made a statement that what was happening violated the core values of the profession. One of the longer-serving counselors went to a microphone and chided me, saying, ALA does not have any core values. That will surprise those of you who have read the policy manual, the revision of which we adopted this morning, because we now do. However, it took time and two task forces for that statement to be adopted. As a side note, our current president-elect was one of those who was on the second task force and was instrumental in designing and guiding a process which resulted in the adoption of a statement. My biggest regrets is that I will not be on council when Maureen presides next year. One of the things that has not changed is the key staff person for council, the secretariat. For those of you who have not discovered it yet, Lois Ann is a colleague, is, as a colleague described recently, the soul of the body. She keeps things running. She has the support for that in many directions. One of the things that my years in management taught me that treating staff well is critical. All of the support staff are critical and help us. We need to recognize that both as a body and on a personal level. The approach to parliamentary procedure has changed with the change in parliamentarians a while ago.
Michael, can I ask you to wasn't going to cut it off when you were praising Lois Ann, but you're past your 3 minutes, so can I ask you to wrap?
I have like 2 sentences left.
All right.
The goal of parliamentary procedure is to allow us to conduct our business and ensure that all opinions are considered. One of our current parliamentarians' admonitions is that suffering is optional. That is very true. Last week I was teaching a class as part of the library support staff certification program provided by my employer to support staff in our state. And as part of the course, the group set some ground rules. The last of which is my closing admonition to all of you. Have fun. When you're having fun, it's easier to get work done. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Councillor at Large and co-convener of the unofficial group, the ALA Biblio Quilters, delighted to report to you all that the quilts that were on display in front of the exhibits hall have sold for $3,581, which goes to the Hoy Scholarship Fund for graduate library education. Thank you.
Microphone six.
Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Counselor, and I'd like to invite all of the counselors to join us tonight at 8:30 here in the Anaheim Marriott in Gold Key Rooms 1 and 2 for the ALA Council Forum number 2, and I think we can have some fun there to honor Michael a bit. So 8:30, Anaheim Marriott, you're in the building now. Gold Key 1 and 2, we will start at 8:30. If you have any agenda items, things you'd like to talk about, song and dance you'd like to do, just let me know. Let my co-convener friend Rodney know, and we will get you on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Lloyd Garcia, FIBO, Councillor at Large, and also Chair of the Committee on Membership Meetings. Thank you, Council, for attending the virtual membership meeting and your suggestions to continue structuring this meeting that provides new access to association information and business for members while allowing more participation by members who do not attend conferences regularly. So this is very important. And thanks also for coming to the membership meeting on Saturday.
Thank you. I ask you to make sure you have turned in your vote tally and signed it. I saw Lois Ann collecting them, and if there is no objection, I declare the second meeting of the ALA Council adjourned.